Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, Scotland are top of the league, but we're still no happy. Captain Robertson urges fans to be positive. And there are fans again at Pittodrie and Dingwall. I'm Andrew Slaven, and like Steve Clark, I've got a couple of good characters with me in the show. First up, it's the Telegraph's JJ Bull, and we've got Scotland's biggest fan, who's always positive, Laura Brannan. Hello.
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 Yeah, you're both of your hellos perfectly sum up my intro. Yeah, are you positive, Laura? How are you feeling after the last two performances from Scotland?
Well, performance-wise, I'm not positive at all, but terms of overall feeling from the double header, we won, we're top of the league, and we're in a good position, it's all going well, and let's not get carried away with ourselves.
Interesting. JJ, we had Gavin McCann wrote into us with a very simple question: are we rubbish, and why aren't we, if we're top of the league?
How do you sum this up? It's quite complicated, isn't it? Like, there's just so much to go into. We'll have to go through it about stage and stage. It's not that we're terrible. Scotland's in this difficult situation where I think if we played some in a way like Northern Ireland or Iceland, for example, really compact and defensive and just wait for a chance to get up maybe five times in the game and take a chance, we'd do quite well. But our players are just technically a lot better than some others. So I'd say Scotland's players individually are better. So you can't, I don't think you can get away with doing that when you can play more expansive football. I mean, look at Ireland. You've got Stephen Kenny is trying to introduce like high pressing with this team that's maybe not quite used to it. But it takes time to change any style. Scotland's kind of stuck. Like, Clark's gone back to this, like, a system. We'll talk about it more later on, but it's gone back to something a little like what we used to have in Euro 96 and World Cup 98, so it's very retro. I mean, everyone's wearing 90s clothes these days, aren't they? So that's maybe how they fashion. It's all cyclical. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll talk about it, but both yes and no.
Yeah, a simple question but a complicated answer. Well, listen, we're going to be talking about the game. Apologies to Paul Scotland Flag on Twitter, because he asked us not to talk about anything but the game, to talk about anything else, but that's exactly what we're going to do. Sorry.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
You know you make me want to shout.
The Harvey's in and equalises with a sumptuous finish for Israel.
Tetzel sliding it through here. And it's put away by Jakub Pešek. And Scotland's worst fears are realised here. Harvey in some amount of space here. It's a lovely cross and it's a lovely finish. And it's Lyndon Dykes in only his second game for Scotland. Here comes Christie, and it's right in the corner. Two penalties in two games, and Scotland needed to turn it around here, and they have done.
So yeah, Scotland faced Israel, and despite taking the lead through a Ryan Christie penalty, they couldn't see out the victory as Erin Zahavi carved up the Scottish defence to equalise. Then on Monday, we played the Czech reserves. They came out with a point to prove and got off to a predictable start as they opened the scoring. I didn't really think much about this game. I knew we would go down 1-0, but it wasn't too long before Scotland were level thanks to Lyndon Dykes, which is good for him to get off the mark. And then we got a winner from the spot through Ryan Christie again. But it didn't feel like a win. It was a bit more like an anxiety test. But we've said it in the intro, we're top of the league. Everything's rosy, right? You're like a creaking door, like in a horror show. That's what it feels like.
Like, I kind of thought, like, we cannot mess this up. Everyone was saying, like, we all know the script, we all know what's going to happen. And I thought, even Scotland can't do a Scotland here. This is, it's too predictable for Scotland to mess up against, what was it, the Czech C team?
It was, because the Czech, the first team, let's say, they had coronavirus go through their camp, right? And they played Slovakia anyway. But after the game, the Czech FA came out and cancelled the game, basically. And then UEFA stepped in.
This was crazy.
It was a bit of a bizarre scenario, right? So I think both camps were a bit caught out by this. Laura, Scotland's main team, their best team that they could put out, played the third, maybe fourth best team that Czech Republic could have played out. So we should have been really good in this game. But why weren't we?
Even before we get into the tactics and analyse the game, can we just get a touch on how crazy a situation this was? It almost felt like this was everything that would normally happen to Scotland. The way that there was just so much bad luck through their squad in terms of COVID. So I think what happened was, I think it was their masseuse was positive, and then the two players that had come into contact with them had to self-isolate. And then on the day of the game, I think somebody else in the coaching team tested positive. So they then retested everyone in the squad. Everyone was negative, so they played the game. I don't really get that part of why they were allowed to play the game, but afterwards they had to self-isolate. That's a bit strange of a kind of grey area there. But the fact that they then came out after the game and just decided, no, we're not playing you. we're not turning up. And we're all a bit like, what? What? So the SFA didn't know, UEFA didn't know.
We kind of thought we'd get the full 3 points straight up, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, we were all checking out the rule books on a Friday night to see how we'd get our 3-0 win out of it. So it was all a wee bit weird. It was all very much of a kind of Scotland scenario. It was normally that kind of happens to us, that kind of bad luck. And then the other question I kind of popped in my head was, why were we not playing the Czech under-21 team? It felt as though it was a natural progression for them to then upgrade that squad to the first team and then bring in their 19s to the under-21 tournament. So I'm not quite sure what the thinking was there in terms of saying, no, we're not going to do that. So essentially what they did was they brought in a load of players in their kind of mid-20s, late-20s, who are just kind of league players that have never really been good enough for the national team, alongside some that have retired from international football. So if you imagine kind of a bit like us calling up Liam Polworth and Jordan White to play alongside Charlie McGrew, that are just boys that have never really been given their chance before, never really met even the other international boys and never really been gelled with them, and they've been given like 48 hours to kind of pull together some sort of tactics. And to be fair to them, I think we all expected them to do well, and they did. They didn't really have anything to lose. And I think that kind of showed in their gameplay and their mentality.
This all started the last two games. We should talk about Israel first as well, JJ, because one thing that we noticed is Steve Clark's chosen a new system for Scotland, a bit more of a 3-5-2. What are your takes from this? Because
I don't like it.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you said so. Explain though, because you're better at it than me.
It makes sense, right? So it makes sense for what we've got. Where do we start? Like, Scotland, I think the Scotland I've always watched, Euro 96 and World Cup 98, it was mostly a back three that Craig Brown played. And you can say it's a back five, it's a back three, and then it's a five in defensive phases, and the two strikers are meant to show people out wide and blah, 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 blah. But what we've got now is a back three that is composed of players who aren't really centre-backs. Scott McKenna is, and I think they're okay in both games. But the first game against Israel, I had Kieran Tierney, who can play that position. Doesn't mean he's great at it. But then he had Scott McTominay, who is an attacking midfielder. He's one of these players that gets lumped into being defensive because he's tall and strong. So he looks tall, so people go, oh, he looks like a defensive player, but he's not. Now, when you look at his statistics, you look at the way he plays for Man United, he's basically like an advanced ball-winning player, that makes sense. He's like Fellaini. He wins the ball high up. His passing, if you look at any of his passing maps, it's always sideways, it's never progressive. It's always sideways, and he wins the ball, it goes sideways. But the idea to put him at centre-back, because it's a position that people must know he can play, which is where he's filled in a couple of times as a sub, I think, even late in games for Man United.
Yeah.
But he's a midfielder. So you stick McTominay at centre-back, and the idea is, I think, that McTominay and Tierney, depending on phase of play and where the ball is, if it's left side, Tierney can then overlap so Robertson can come inside. If it's the other side, McTominay can overlap for us, a bit like Sheffield United, that kind of overlapping centre-backs bit. But it might not even be that that's the idea. The idea might simply be that Tierney and McTominay are comfortable in the ball, so when Scotland have possession, rather than shelling it away, which has been a problem in the past, not being able to progress it. Tierney McTominay can take the ball 2 feet and play into midfield, and we can move through the gears that way. But
it didn't really happen that way, did it?
Didn't really happen. And I think there's like specific things, specific reasons I don't think it worked for me. I think when you play, like Conte played this kind of system, like a 3-5-2, with Italy in there. What was the last Euros? 16? What year are we in? 16.
16.
Was it maybe the world? Whenever he was last in charge of Italy, you had them playing a similar thing, right? You had a big, tall lad up top and that. And the way they worked, the system is different. But Scotland really spread out, I thought. And I think you have to be more compact to make this to work the way it should do. And I don't think you can get Robertson and Forrest on the ball in places they need to be. And all Israel had to do was let them funnel the ball down wide, block that off. Suddenly, you've not got any real input from Forrest and Robertson. And then you're relying on, like, John McGinn as a second striker? Trying to run in behind?
Or Ryan Christie, yeah. More so, I think. But it certainly seemed like a system that the players were not used to. And a lot of the build-up to the game in the pre-match interviews, Steve Clark saying, you don't really need to coach players at this level. You just rely on their abilities and their understanding.
Well, that's true.
Of the game, which made perfect sense. But it didn't feel like the players were really getting it.
No, but then if you think, like McTominay, for example, right, is an international level player, but he's an international level, probably midfielder. And the reason some players are amazing defenders is because they have mastered all the skills involved with that particular position. As soon as you move them, it doesn't mean they're instantly going to be as good. They're just not as good. This is the plain and simple of it.
Who could Steve Clarke play in that position? Because I know Declan Gallagher was on the bench. Could he fit in that role bit better, as a bit more of a natural defender?
Maybe.
That was my point as well, though, is because I was seeing this, and I don't want to keep saying like the biased Motherwell employee that always supports the Motherwell players, but Declan Gallagher is a natural defender. And I know it sounds so simplistic to say play players in their position. McTominay is a good footballer, but it doesn't make him a good centre-back. He's not a natural at it, and it's down to simple little things like just being able to read the ball and simple defensive skills that come through. It's not about flair, it's not about fancy football, it's just defenders know how to read certain situations that midfielders don't. And I know that sounds so simplistic.
Totally agree.
But that it works.
You're dead right, Laura, though. See how many times he's caught out of position, McTominay? Just even because you don't know exactly where to be when. And that's part of the skill set of being a defender, is knowing exactly where to be in which phase of play. And that causes disruption in... If you're in any way panicked, you don't have your defensive shape. And you see McKenna's and having to recover. Like, if one person's slightly out of position, it makes the ones who know they're in position have to adapt to try and cover it. Because they don't know the guy's going to realise in time to come back in. And by the time that's happened, you've got one little error, which then allows another team to score. And if you're playing against a team who are similarly talented, like Israel are a good team, right? Czech Republic, the first team, was good. I thought they had some good players out on the pitch for the game. When are we recording this? Do it last night. As for like Gallagher, like Laura, I think he's a decent player, and I totally agree with him being a natural defender. But we just don't really have great centre backs. McKenna, I think, is good. I think Cooper should be in there. But then,
well, it can come down to the idea that Clark wants as many good footballers on the field as possible. And I get what you were saying earlier on, JJ, that if McTominay's at the back with Tierney on the left, McTominay on the right, that if they can be calm on the ball, they can play passes quite simply to get plays running.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, like, surely Steve Clarke will look at the last two games, he will analyse it, and he'll go, I'm not doing that again.
Maybe.
It certainly didn't feel right to me watching the game. It just didn't feel, the fact that he persisted with it in the Czech Republic game after the Israel game.
Well, I would look at it another way, Steven, though, because if you look at so we beat Czech Republic, right, for one thing, and we largely kept Israel quiet. They were the better team in the second half. I think that's one of the things to remember from it. And we sort of won these games with it. And I think if you analyse it, you can see that we kept the games largely tight, weren't really too troubled off the ball. It just wasn't very fun to watch. But a lot of international football is like that. And like I was sort of touching on at the start, you don't need great individual defenders to make yourself a good defensive team, but the whole team's got to defend as a whole unit. And I think there were too many people just slightly unsure of what they're doing. And you think of the amount of time, you've got to give them a lot of credit for getting into this game even and doing well, because a lot of them are not fully out of pre-season yet. There's players who aren't match sharp. You've also got, like, how many days has Steve Clarke had to work with these players? Basically none. If you look, any new manager comes in, he needs about 18 months at club level. I think I was talking to, what's his name, Renny Mulenstein, the ex-Man United coach. He says 18 months is what you need to put your own stamp onto a football team, and that's at club level. International take forever. And I look at Ireland trying to change their entire system. It will take like a decade for that to work. And then Clarke's just trying to do very simple things now, and maybe he just needs to give it more time. But how much time do you get as an international manager? None!
But saying all that, why did he change so much going into the second game? Like, the likes of Fleck and Armstrong and McLean are all boys that are based down south that are technically in their pre-season right now. And they were replacing boys like McGregor, who's playing regularly just now in the Scottish Premiership. So why do you think what was the mentality there? Was that to give them game time ahead of the playoff?
It certainly felt a little bit like to me that, well, everything was pointing in a direction of a win for us. So why not give these guys a chance? They're still good professional footballers.
Sure, it wasn't complacency.
But I don't think that was why. I would say it's going to be to do with statistical analysis, data analysis of running stats. So if you, at any club, they've got all these other staff that are in the background, just analysts who just look at the numbers. That's when they wear those sports bra things. They've got they can check GPS and stuff.
Yeah.
And when players stop making as many accelerations, decelerations that they're used to in a certain game, then often they'll just get subbed off, because it means you can keep that position. It affects your pressing, it affects the way you can run the midfield. So I think with a lot of the midfielders, like John McGinn looked like he was empty at the end of that Israel game.
Yeah, he was.
So a play like that, but they'll look at the data, and also their clubs will be in touch with them with their pre-season plan, what they've been doing to get to that fitness. And if you overload them, you can cause damage to them, and it's just not worth doing it.
Yeah, but
and the players came in are all right.
But JJ, it wasn't the case. McGinn, I can understand, because he was also in pre-season, but players like Jack and McGregor are not. So they shouldn't have lower numbers, because they should be up to complete fitness and match sharpness right now.
Maybe, but then I would equate it to like playing Football Manager when you've got players at 100%, right? And then you go into another, if you play a game on a Sunday and a game on a Wednesday, and you get some of your players, no matter how important they are, and they're on 91%, you're thinking, I'll probably get more out of the guy who's got 100. And then you bring McGinn on later on, and he's got that extra bit. Because also the game plan could have been with Czech Republic, these boys have maybe not played as much football, let's keep the things tight as we can. Let the guys with energy play the first part of this. The other boys are going to run out of energy before we are, because we're in a better state. Put on the boys like McGinn and that later on, and then you can run them into the ground. It was a tricky tie, but that could be part of the game plan on top of the system tactics, which are two different things, by the way.
I understand that, JJ. That makes sense. It just felt a bit like, for me, that the amount of personnel changes brought less balance to the squad. But put part of that to one side for now, because the fact of the matter is, we are top of the league and we are unbeaten in this League Two after two games, albeit. But these were two games that we kind of felt like we should have performed a lot better in. But nonetheless, let's look at some positives. The one that stands out for me really is, and I'm still yet to be decided on this, but Lyndon Dykes coming in, making his first start for Scotland, and then he gets his goal against Czech Republic, which I think was a really, really good goal. I'm not fully with the media hype here that he is the answer and the answer to all of our prayers, but he certainly seems like a logical option.
I would agree with that. I'm not blown away by him. I was never really that excited in terms of just seeing his name in the team sheet, but I think he did well. And I think he's done very well in terms of holding the ball up. He didn't have a lot of shots on target. If that's the only way you want to break down the strikers, then that's a very kind of blinkered way, as you're saying, to look at it, because he wasn't getting the service and no one was helping him. So yes, the uneducated eye might just look at that and go, oh well, he got one goal, he didn't really kind of change the game. But when you look at what was happening around him, the only kind of real balls into the box in both games were coming from the flanks. It was kind of coming from the wing backs, and it was few and far between. The midfield was getting drowned out. Christie had so much to do in terms of picking up from everyone else, let alone his own job. So
he was,
I think,
overplaying as well, Christie, do you think?
Absolutely, 100%.
So many times he played someone in. And on that note,
opportunity against Czech Republic near the end.
At the end, I was just to pick up on Laura's bit on the crosses. I totally agree as well. Everything's going down the flanks for chance creation. Another thing as well, if you look at like the the economics of crossing. Statistically, it's one of the lowest. So it's different kinds of crosses, obviously, but crosses in the box for headers, I think, are probably about the lowest. I could be really wrong here, so some nerd's going to call me out. But if you look at like Man City and that, they don't just hurl the ball into the box for a header because you don't score from them very often. Same with corners, you never score from them, right? But you do score with low balls into the box, often squared, which is why Man City and teams at Liverpool so often get these players into the half space, if you would call it that, and cut it back into the box, so it's a high-value chance. If you're just hitting early crosses into the box, all you're looking for is second balls, and it's really... I don't like that. But then that's why Dykes is in there, because then it gives you the option of being able to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's another reason I think the system is what it is, because of the players available. It suits the player we have. But
well, yeah. Maybe we'll have a few more players available when the English Premier League is back, because one player that I think has been good for Scotland over the past few years, Ryan Fraser, he's got his new club. He's off to Newcastle. We'll see how well that goes. But they'll obviously be back quite soon, and that's a player that's going to come and get involved in the squad. And the other thing as well is you touched on that Steve Clarke needs time, JJ.
He's a very good manager.
He's a very good manager. I can't believe I haven't said that yet. But I was looking at previous Scotland managers after 10 games, and he has pretty much exactly the same after 10 games as Gordon Strachan and Craig Levein.
Almost wins. As if there was no need to get distracted in the first place, eh?
Imagine that. Possibly. Well, this is the thing. So Steve Clarke, exactly the same stats as Gordon Strachan and Craig Levein, by the way. 5 wins, 1 draw, 4 defeats. And the thing is, after 10 games, at least Gordon Strachan got an absolute belter of a game against England. We also beat Croatia home and away. What did they end up doing? Getting to the World Cup final?
Heard of them again.
It's We have Andrew Robertson asking for positivity from the fans to be positive about the squad, and yet the only positiveness coming from the Scotland camp right now are results. And I get it, I totally get it, but I just want to believe that we're a good team.
Laura, this is what it's like to support Aberdeen, by the way.
I feel like... Welcome. So back kind of more in the days when I had money and job wasn't kind of an option, and I travelled a lot with the Tartan Army with my big group of friends, I still see now around this time of year, I get a lot of the Facebook on the stay posts, and it's always from like double header trips away and stuff, and all the memories from different Scotland games, and it's always kind of the same complaint of, yes, we played really well, but we didn't get the result, so why is everyone still happy about this? We don't have the points and we're nowhere near the top of the table. And I feel like I was the only one saying, that's not good enough. I don't care how badly we play, I just want the points. And then we'll worry about the performance afterwards. Whereas now, that seems to be what's happening. We're getting all the luck for some strange reason. And everyone's a bit like, I'm not really happy. Yeah, it's not very good, is it? It's like, what do you want?
It's not in our nature, Laura. It's not in our nature to be happy.
I think that we are so caught up in this injustice of we haven't qualified for 2 decades and we're always cheated out of it and we're always got luck on our side. And we actually forget we're not a big nation and we're not a good football team in that sense. We're never going to be up there. And sometimes we punch above our weight. Sometimes we've had very good campaigns, and yes, we have been cheated out of it and been very unlucky towards the end. But do you think teams like Lithuania and Moldova and Malta, I'd say Iceland are much bigger than us, to be fair. But do you think these smaller teams that are more kind of League C, even League D, are coming away with 4 points out of 6 and analysing what went wrong and complaining that it wasn't good enough? Because I think their sort of fans would be like, this is great. And we kind of need to accept that we're at that level now. No, we are at that level.
No, we're not.
We are. We have some individual good players, but we're not at that level. See, we come back to your league. Come back to
another video game reference to put my point on this one. So if we look at the FIFA ratings for the teams, and I know this is stupid, but genuinely, I do value it, right? Let me just get the team stats up, right? So Scotland are rated, there we go. So FIFA 20, the attack 68, midfield 76, defence 74. Name one of those teams you just said. Lithuania is one.
Yeah.
Let's have a look. They don't even exist in the game. That's how much better we are. No, but joking aside, if you have like a, if Scotland were say a 4-star team, maybe it's probably a 3, 3.5 at the moment, right? Teams like those, they're 2.5 too, but because the, it's just weird international football. It's often that the teams aren't very good, but they just, I mean, they're all defensive, right? And then it's just a little error. And because there's so much less cohesion in these teams than you get in the club level, it's different. I wonder whether, like, England's on the right track now with all these young players they've got coming through, and they follow the kind of model you get from Germany and France. And maybe we should be more like England.
The thing is, we are... whoa. I'm going to gloss over that one.
JJ.
Completely.
Just lost all our listeners.
If we want to be successful, we should follow the successful models.
But hold on a minute. We are... you can't scoff at this. We're not a great... we're not a big team because we're in League B in the Nations League because
we...
we're
not great.
Because we cruised our group. We got lucky last season with a group of two other teams who were beatable, and we beat them twice. So we were very lucky in that, and we got promotion. And right now, we're currently bottom of pot three when it comes to the World Cup qualifying group, which will be drawn later in the year. So we're on the brink of going down to pot four, which is probably more our level. So if we do get into pot three, I think that is a success for our nation, because then we'll get easier teams.
Oh, clutching at straws a wee bit, though. But look, we'll move on a
little bit. Let's not be England. That's the moral of the story.
Let's hope that... I kind of think things will get better through time, because, let's face it, we've got Israel again on the 8th of October. Thursday, the 8th of October, is when we'll be playing them again. And hopefully, if we get through that, we then play either Norway or Serbia. Is that right?
Cancel the games.
Did anyone see the Norway goals against Northern Ireland?
Oh my God. So against these games happening next month in November for many, many reasons.
Well,
one of them being Haaland is still fit is one reason, but that's not the main one, put it that way.
He's fit like. But anyway, that's our therapy about Scotland over. Let's get back to club football, please. Wonderful.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Listen to it, totally ad-free, via The Athletic.
All right, the Premiership returns. Here's the matches that are coming up this weekend. We've got Aberdeen, Kilmarnock, Livingston host Hamilton, Motherwell hosts St Johnstone, Rangers have got Dundee United, Ross County are at home against Celtic, and St Mirren against Hibernian. Aberdeen versus Kilmarnock and Ross County Celtic, guys, are going to have fans.
Yeah,
fans are back. Laura will be delighted to see that this is happening. But it's a pilot to get people back into stadiums. What do you guys think of this news, first and foremost?
It's obviously really good.
Yeah,
it's great.
Absolutely.
I don't know how they're going to do it yet. Is there any information out just now about...
Well, just remember last week when we spoke to the Hibs operations manager?
Yes, I do. I meant more that literally how they're going to space them out in the stands.
I've got no idea, but... it's still going to be a weird atmosphere, but the biggest thing is it's just a step in the right direction, surely.
Definitely. It's so positive, I think. 300 fans is not a lot.
It's Livingston Normal Gate.
They'll have all the space that they want in the grounds. It will be interesting to see how they manage the kind of entry and exit side of things. Also, if they kind of make face masks mandatory, I think is another interesting point. I don't think anything's been mentioned on it, but... I personally see that as a way to get more fans in quicker, to be in closer proximity with each other. And if they implement that right from day one, I think it'll be easier than doing it somewhere later down the line.
I am really excited to find out whether the people who get in are going to be doing chants, first of all, to be funny, right, because so few. But hearing the ones who are like, what the f was that? That it'll be really easy to identify them, which will be funny.
But that was what was good. That's what I thought was quite good about televised games without fans. If you didn't listen to it with the commentary, with the fake crowd atmosphere that was added, you could really pick up who were the most vocal players, which I thought was actually quite interesting. But yeah,
you enjoyed that. Yeah.
The thing is, you working in TV, you hear Scottish fans anyway in Scottish football. Doesn't really matter that there's going to only be 300. You'll just hear them more. The 300 this is Scotland.
The players will be able to see where they are. I bet, like, do the players ever speak to you, Laura, at Motherwell? They must be able to hear folk individually in the crowd.
Oh, yeah. The manager spoke about it quite a lot as well. He's got a fan that sits behind him that constantly berates him over everything he does. And it's almost like a kind of confidence booster for him, though, because he knows that he's still there. He's not left yet. He's not giving up on him. But I think fans will make a massive difference.
Do you think he'll make an impact, Laura?
Oh, definitely. So we had our European game week before last there, and we made the decision to filter through crowd noise into Fir Park for the game. And we experienced it at the away games we had at Ross County and Easter Road as well. And what we didn't quite like about them was the fact that it was quite generic, and it was just general cheers when the ball was maybe in the middle of the pitch, and it wasn't really specific to what was happening, like you would get with Sky, who's there's like literally somebody sitting there pressing a button. So we decided to approach in a different manner, and we took footage from last season of the supporters with the drum, singing, chanting, and singing actual Motherwell songs. Sometimes it was louder than others, sometimes it kind of mulled down the way you would get in a normal game anyway. And we played that on a loop. We put together about a half hour clip of that, did it on loop and played it over the European game. And I don't want to kind of say, yeah, that was the only game we've won this season, but the players and the management also commented on it afterwards, on just how much it kind of gave the boys a, not just a push, because obviously they all know it's fake, but I think it also gave some boys a wee bit of confidence for if they're not overly keen on shouting and being heard by everyone in the ground, let alone the coaches. It meant that they could then speak to themselves and their own teammates without it echoing around the entire ground. So it maybe gave them a little bit of encouragement to speak up. Yeah, and every little bit helps, to be honest. So in terms of getting actual real fans back in, real reactions, I think is only going to be a positive thing.
Benji, that we had in the podcast a few weeks ago, said that Ross County have also got fake crowd noise. So maybe that will continue for them as well. JJ, have you done a tactical breakdown on the St Johnstone team? I think you said you were going to do one. What's been working well for them?
The 2.1 did. They're back doing. You can subscribe to them and you get like
brilliant
newsletter. I've been reading it. It's really good. Oh, and they've got a excellent analysis piece in St Johnstone that was out recently about how Callum Davidson's changed the way they've played, changed the system, and we're talking about how they're going to progress and what they're going to do. And he's gone like it's very trendy to have a back three at the moment, but that's what they're doing. But his is based on this. Like Chris Wilder's Sheffield United bit with these overlapping centre backs. It's something like Danny McNamara is his name, isn't it? The guy who got on loan from Millwall.
That's right. Danny? Yeah, he's full back though. He's not exactly a centre half.
No, that's it. But it's the reason they've been trying it. What he likes about it is that teams don't know how to press against it. So when he gets the ball at wing back, Jason Kerr, who's just a centre back, will overlap McNamara, who's normally in the right, I think. So unless one of their opposition players steps out, it means that there's loads of space because they've basically created overload. So you stack the wide areas with maybe 3v2 or 3v1. So you can be able to get loads of crosses into the box for an opposing centre-back who's usually very good at heading it. The other thing that like what Wilder's team does is that when one of the centre-backs goes, the two midfielders kind of drop to protect the space that was there. So the attack is a 3-2-5, which is basically what Mrs. Johnson will be doing within the system, just rather than having it all the attackers being attacking players, some of them are defenders now. It's pretty cool. But we'll need to look at it more.
It could be a fluid system in a way.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to the 2.1 because I like them. I think it's really good. And if you like the Scottish stuff, it's a thing.
Friend!
No, but, you know, there's lots of.
They are very good. I do like their tactical set.
Analysis is done generally. I try. But,
cool, man. So, speaking to both of you now, what game stands out for you out of that list?
I think
Aberdeen Kilmarnock for you, JJ, I suppose.
How did you guess?
I'm really looking forward to seeing the Rangers Dundee United game. I think that's going to be a good one.
That was good, yeah.
I don't think Dundee United have been back at Ibrox since they beat Rangers 3-1 in the Scottish Cup semi-final back in, what was it, 2014? The day that Nadir Chiefchi celebrated before he hit the back of the net. There's a really good rivalry between Rangers and Dundee United. I think it's quite tasty, and especially if you're not on one side of them. I think from a neutral perspective, I think it's really interesting to watch. And both teams always kind of put up a good fight against each other.
Interesting. I'm quite looking forward to St Mirren against Hibs, actually, because I'm not too sure if Nisbet is going to be coming back. Kevin Nisbet's been out for Hibs for a wee while, and ever since he's been out, they've changed their system. They were kind of looked quite regular to be a 4-4-2, but since he's been out, they were a 4-1-4-1 and then a 3-4-2-1 against Aberdeen, and they lost that. That was their first defeat, and I think they're missing him a wee bit. I think although they were doing well at the start of the season, it didn't seem like they were comfortable. So I think they've only scored two goals in their last three games. But I wonder if St Mirren will open up for them a little bit. They've been only two games at home, undefeated. But I just think that Hibs could have a bit more about them in this game, because I think they'll want to get back to winning ways. I think that one will be interesting, because if Hibs win that, I think they'll have a good couple of games coming up. What about you, JJ, other than Aberdeen Kilmarnock? Because that's going to finish 1-0, we know that.
Yeah, we do know that. I'm really excited to see what kind of noises we get from the fans that get into the stadium, and to find out who actually gets in. Be interesting to see how Ross County get on against Celtic, because they've been playing well and they've been playing in a different way to how they were last season. So there's every chance they could do something at Celtic, who are about out of form at the moment. I, like Laura, am interested to see what Dundee United can do against Rangers, especially because Rangers are still struggling to get that killer instinct into them that Gerrard's trying to put in. And if Dundee United play as well defensively as they have done and will be set up to do, then it could be the kind of game that frustrates them. It could be one of those that comes a 0-0. It could also be like a 4 or 5 for Rangers. Don't really know. And the other thing at Celtic, they've got another centre-back that's come in, Shane Duffy. Have you watched him play much, Slaven?
I've not seen much of him, but asking a few people about him, it looks like it could be a decent addition. I just wonder if him coming in opens the door for someone to leave. Like we heard from Anthony a couple of weeks ago from Sky Sports, saying that he's one of three Celtic players that might be looking for a move away. Christopher Iyer, that's who I'm talking about. So I wonder if that opens the door for him, and maybe a bit of money will be coming in for Celtic, because Duffy's only on a loan. I don't know if there's that's with the outlook of maybe bringing him in permanently next season, but it looks like a good signing on paper anyway. Let's actually look at Aberdeen properly a little bit, against Kilmarnock. There's a bit of news there, isn't there, JJ? Is it Craig Bryson's on the off?
Yeah, it looks like his contract's being mutually terminated. He's come in, he was signed to be the next Shinny as a direct replacement, and it just hasn't worked for him. I'm sure he can still play. Derby fans hold him in high regard, but it's not really worked for him. Ominously, the guys at Here We Go podcast, they spotted that he's played exactly 666 minutes.
Wow.
Wow. He's gone to the dark side now. There's some sort of train of thought that he might end up at Killy. So we shall see. We shall see. I mean, we know it's going to be a 1-0 to Aberdeen. If not, I don't know. Actually, I'd like to see how Kilmarnock play for this, because I need to pay some more attention to them and see what Dyer's doing with them this season. See fit like Ken.
Oh yeah, Kilmarnock do like their... Well, they just brought in Malumbu, didn't they? They just brought him back for a third stint at Kilmarnock. So I'd be amazed if they would bring in another veteran. But anyway, looking forward to the weekend. I think we should get some odds now with Paddy Power. Abby, we've spent a long time in huge doubts over Scotland's quality, but what did Paddy Power say of their chances of actually qualifying for Euro 2020, even though it's in Euro 2021?
Yeah, it'll still be called Euro 2020 though. Scotland are 3-1 to qualify for the Euro 2020 finals. Republic of Ireland are 11-4, and Northern Ireland are 4-1. So that puts Scotland as the second in that group.
What about the Premiership? That's coming back. What are the odds of a 1-0 win for Aberdeen over Kilmarnock? Because that always happens for Aberdeen.
It always happens, and you'll be unsurprised to hear that is the most likely score, according to Paddy Power. 1-0 to Aberdeen is 9-2. Aberdeen are 4-5 to win this match. Kilmarnock 7-2.
JJ will be delighted.
He will.
what's the most surprising odds that you've on your site right now?
On Paddy Power's website, I thought it was quite surprising that Motherwell were 6-5 to win, and St Johnstone are 23-10, therefore making Motherwell, I think, the favourites in that situation.
Oh my God, we've serviced both of our guests today. Wow. Fantastic. Well, thanks, Abby. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's also over 18s only. T&Cs apply. And when the fun stops, stop.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
All right, fantasy football time. And it's double game week for St Mirren and Celtic. That was a match that that St Mirren missed because Bolly Bolingolly was a very naughty boy. Didn't tell anyone that he went and travelled. So you could captain Edouard because he scored for the under-21s. So he might play for Celtic this time round. Past couple of weeks.
Raising that because he's on a yellow injury little icon. So we don't know for sure.
Or even better, Ryan Christie scored 2 goals. And he could be continuing to be on fire after this week.
The chances of Celtic getting penalties is very high. I don't know if Christie's actually the main penalty taker for Celtic. He might be actually. I think anyone else like, on your list?
Well, the most sensible way to win points at the moment seems to be by having the best defenders in, and Rangers have the best defence. So stacking your team of Rangers lads is the way forward. Yeah, otherwise, yeah.
The Rangers boys have definitely made the biggest difference fullbacks for me, and also vice captaining a Rangers player as well, because you'll get the double points depending on if he's keeping a clean sheet or scoring goals or whatever, depending on his position on the pitch. So I've been kind of in the habit now of captaining a Rangers player and vice-captaining one, because considering they haven't conceded yet, it's getting me quite far up the table.
Oh my, yeah, you actually had a good week. I got knocked off top spot, really frustratingly. I think Kieran Canning is now number one, but I've got my eyes on him. Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for holding our hand through it all. It's been a month of forgetting all about the Scotland national team. But until then, get in touch and let us know what you're liking and disliking about the podcast this season by tweeting at The Totally Show or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, if that's how you're listening to us anyway. Remember, you can get yourself an Athletic 30-day trial by heading to theathletic.com/Scottish Show. But for now, JJ and Laura, thank you both for being so wonderful and your analysis this week. I don't mean to seem so condescending. But thank you also to the Little Kicks. Thanks to Abby, our wonderful producer. And thanks most of all to you for listening. We'll be back next week. Cheerio.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta, and be sure to check out our website, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Muddy Knees Media.